bass player in that song is Penn Jillette. This is also who's talking to you. Sitting across from me is Michael Goudeau.
Good morning, Mr. Jillette.
We're in Las Vegas, Nevada, talking to everywhere else and to Las Vegas. Here at Vintage Nudes Studio. We're on Free FM. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning, Keller.
And if you want to call, we might take some calls today, because tomorrow we got Gilbert. So tomorrow there'll be no room for calls. There'll be no room for us.
There'll be no room for anyone to speak but Gilbert.
It'll be just Gilbert tomorrow. Tomorrow is the Gilbert Show. So Gilbert
Godfrey. I'm
looking
forward to it.
I think most talented comedian in our lifetimes.
He's sure funny guy.
Just perfectly funny. And also skilled and crazy, which is a combination you don't get often. You know, you get that combination. And who? Miles Davis, Bob Dylan, Picasso, Stravinsky. Everybody else is skilled or crazy. Skilled
right.
and crazy. Hard combination to find. And when you do find it, it's called genius, at least in performing.
Skilled and crazy.
Skilled and crazy together, sure. You know, okay. Bob Dylan can do anything, and he chooses to do nutty stuff. You know, Miles
right.
Davis, you know, could do anything, chose to do, well, create four musical forms. Stravinsky, too. There's others, I'm sure. I don't know them. But there's others, I'm sure. In other forms, I'm not sure about. I mean, like David Allan Coe in country western music is crazy, but not, you know, overly skilled. You know, a lot of people skilled, but not overly crazy.
A lot of people crazy, not overly skilled.
Yeah. It just goes that way. When the two hit together, it's a fabulous, beautiful thing. And speaking of someplace that those two did not hit together... I went to clown convention.
I know, without me.
Without you, which is nutty. You know, you're my liaison into
exactly.
the world of clowns.
Translator.
There was no clown sex there.
Not
I mean,
bit.
Way no clown sex. You know, big clown pictures of Jesus. You know, they have these silks that they produce at the end of their act, and some that say, you know, praise God, and a big picture
right.
that looked more like Cat Stevens than Jesus, but on a silk, and then a lot of noses. Which is something that I guess if you were writing a sketch, like if you're doing a bad Saturday Night Live sketch
right.
about
you
clown,
could pick your nose.
Exactly. But this is a small convention. I mean, by convention, mm-hmm. like 50 people.
It
and my
does.
Friend Doc Swan, who is one of my really old friends, which
sure.
you are not. You are not an old friend. I've only known you like 10, 15
10 years.
Yeah. Doc Swan goes back like 30 years.
Wow.
I was doing a monologue in Philadelphia. Of course, my whole life has been a monologue. And that's something you need to understand, Gudeau.
I do understand that. You and Gilbert. I'm just going to sit outside tomorrow.
So we were working in Philadelphia, which uh-huh. is Teller's hometown.
Yeah.
And we were working at upstairs for like 100 people. And I used to end the show with a monologue about Carney and about Sideshow. And I would talk about... you know, for like 12 minutes. That's the ratio I like of talking to skill. About 12 minutes of setup, boom, about 30 seconds of skill.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking about Sideshow and Freaks and so on, and what it meant to me. And it was a very personal monologue. It wasn't really about any sort of real history, but it was about what it meant to me. And then I would end it by doing some fire eating, right?
Uh-huh.
And after the show, this guy, about my size, about, you know, 6'4".
He's a big guy.
A big guy, tall guy, wearing a top hat. And some sort of cape, you know, very, very theatrical, right? Comes up to me and says, that
a
was
top hat and a cape.
Yeah.
It's the magician from Frosty the Snowman, isn't it? Never seen anyone in a top hat and a cape.
There must have been some magic in that old silk hat we found. See, that's the problem with all deductive reasoning in this country, is that uh-huh. kids learn there must have been some magic in that old silk hat we found.
You have another explanation.
Because when we put it on his head, he began to dance around. Correlation is not causation. That should be a line in Frosty the Snowman. It should say, there must have been some magic in that old silk hat. Because when we put it on his head, correlation is not causation.
You think probably was some magic in that old top hat they found would have worked?
Could possibly have been
some magic.
There's no
okay.
awareness of Occam's razor in Frosty the Snowman. No awareness that postulating magic... you know, just magic is the answer. It doesn't give you any answer. You know, a snowman is standing up, running around, and dancing, right? A snowman begins to dance around.
It's first, a horror show, first off.
First you scream.
I'm
you
running.
You scream and you run and you cry and you drop to your knees and you kiss your ass goodbye because frozen water is dancing. I mean, that's a nightmare. But then to say, you know, we have to explain this. There's a lot of work to do. And just saying, oh, there must have been some magic in that old silk hat. First of all, has there ever been magic in an old silk hat before?
No. I know.
See, this is the problem. Very bad deductive reasoning in the songs of our children. Frosty okay. the Snowman is responsible for all this craziness going on in the country. And to make the point, I'm tapping my pen on the desk.
You are so serious about this.
So serious about Frosty the Snowman. There must have been, you know, it's just total, it is asserting it.
Perhaps there were mechanics in there that came down through the head of the snowman and expanded through the body and made him dance.
That's not magic.
No, I understand that.
There must have been.
I'm trying to come up with a reasonable explanation for the frosty phenomenon.
There must have been mechanics in that old
there
silk
hat. There must have been mechanics. That works.
So when we put it on his head, he began to dance around. Anyway, so Frosty the Snowman came to our show back in the 70s in the guise of Doc Swan. Maybe it was Doc Swan covered in ice.
There's another fine explanation.
And maybe he just waited till that old silk hat.
He was inside the Frosty, the snowman body, wearing fleece.
Man, would you scream? I mean, if Frosty the Snowman really happened, there's no joy for the kids.
Yeah,
there's just a lot of yellow snow and
nobody,
a big ring
nobody playing
around. Oh, man, he'd freak out. He would just scream. And that's the thing, you know, in monster movies,
right.
People's reactions to me are always understated. They're always way understated, you know, because if any of this stuff happened, you know, you never stop screaming, do you? It's also the reason that I believe that no one believes in UFOs and stuff like that, you know, because if they believed, their whole world is over. You know, if I was at the supermarket, which of course is more astonishing, me going to a supermarket, me going anywhere.
There must have been some magic in that old top hat.
Because when
he went to the grocery store.
He went to Smith's. But if I were in a supermarket and I picked up one of those, you know, tabloid papers,
sure.
And it says, you know, aliens appear in Arizona, take over the government, I don't do a show that night. I rush there to find out the whole world has changed.
Or the other way.
You know, run away, sure. I'm in China. I'm one of the two, you know. I don't know how. I think that people, you know, that's what my friend Rob said. He said he was such an atheist, he didn't believe other people believed. But, you know, it's so nuts. I also don't understand how you can believe in God and ever sin.
Yeah, that's an interesting question to me.
I don't see how you ever make a mistake. It seems like if this is true, there's no need for forgiveness, you know. And I guess the way they get around that, because they've got to make you sin so you go back, is they have all these, you know, you can just think it, and it can be a bad thing.
Right.
But I tell you, if I believed in everlasting life, right, and I believe that I could ruin that with premarital sex, there is no one who could seduce me. Not even Frosty the Snowman. Must have been some magic in that old silk hat he found when they put it on his head. I got so horny, I sinned. You know, it could be that. But I don't believe. But anyway, so Doc Swan.
Frosty was moldable. He could have been any shape you wanted him to be.
I know. Just add.
You're overlooking this possibility.
Still, if I believe that I could ruin everlasting life by having sex with Frosty the Snowman, no amount of shape-shifting snow could ever tempt me. I mean, not even tempt me. I mean, if you're talking about everlasting life versus one screw with a sexy snowman, I don't think, I mean, is there anybody that makes that choice? But in people who believe, you know, believers, there is that choice.
I guess.
There are people day by day who choose that instead of everlasting life, they choose to have sex with Frosty the Snowman and be okay. We got a
or
little
some off, frosty surrogate,
some frosty surrogate, but not that everybody wants to have sex with Frosty the Snowman. But
no.
He is a shapeshifter, so he could be anything you want.
He's not a shapeshifter. You can shift his shape. It's even better. You don't even request it. You just do it yourself.
You don't even request it.
I have a couple of snowballs. Come over here, Frosty.
I believe You are postulating the rape of Frosty the Snowman. You're saying you would have your way with Frosty against his will. Aren't you saying that?
No, I'm saying if Frosty agreed,
you would just
we could change Frosty to whatever I desired.
You would just rip off the carrot nose and go right after that hunk of coal, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? That's the kind of guy you are. Well, you know, who knows what else is in that old silk hat we found, Mr. Gudo?
I might put it on my own head.
And now, if you put a silk hat on your head and began to dance around,
it would still be something in the hat, though. I don't dance well. I decided to dance
that sentence?
All right.
There must have been some magic in that old silk hat we found, because when we placed it on his head, he began to dance around. Probably the original was placed, and then over the thousands of years, it's gone to put. As things get simpler like that. Can I finish my story, please, without interrupting me with Frosty the Snowman?
Doc Swan is in town.
Doc Swan was in town. No, that's not where the story was. The story was Doc Swan had an old silk hat.
And a cape.
That he found, and a cape. And he came up and said, that's a really nice monologue you do about fire eating. That's really beautiful. And
I said, clearly it was the magic in the hat affecting him as well. Oh, that's a great monologue. Why did it come out of my mouth? I didn't mean to say that. Get this hat off of me.
And I said, thank you. Thank you. And then he said, but wouldn't it be better if you could really eat fire? You know, because the fire eating was way, way lame. And so I made a deal with Doc that I would work with him on some juggling stuff. If he taught me fire eating, I went out to his place in Jersey from Philly, and he taught me fire eating. And I've been fire eating now for 30 years using the Doc Swan
method. Against Frosty. You are the only one safe.
If he starts dancing around, I could do that. So Doc is in town, and Doc is also going to do some fire eating at the clown convention. And I got to get, we got to score the fuel for him. It's really hard to buy the fuel. So I got to
get. You can't travel with it anymore.
No. So I got to get my guys at the shop to score some fuel for him so we can do that thing. But that's just my to-do list, which is not part of Free FM. No part of Free FM says, and we'll cover Penn's to-do list. Penn Radio, PennRadio@gmail.com, PennRadio.com. If you want to call in, it's 866-313-FREE, F-R-E-E.
If you want to call in and complain about the Frosty story.
This is just one of the many things that trouble me. I mean, for the first time...
Many things trouble you. If we're down to Frosty, it's gone bad.
No,
it's gone poorly.
That's not that far down on the list.
Oh, really?
That's one of the things that has troubled me. You know, and the other thing that troubled me, and I got... This really troubles me. Neil Armstrong.
Right.
It doesn't trouble me. Neil Armstrong is very cool. There must have been some magic in that NASA helmet they found. Because when we put it on his head, he danced around the moon. Neil Armstrong, very cool guy.
Right.
And, he steps off, he steps to Tranquility Base when the Eagle has landed, and he says, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Yeah.
And I'm in grade school at that point, and they announced that, and I raise my hand, I'm what, 14?
Yeah.
I raise my hand, and I say, what does he mean by that? And they go, they mean he took a small step, and yet it's a big step for all of us. And I go, well, that's not what he's saying. Because I didn't say it this way, but man without the indefinite article before it means mankind. Man, we came in peace for all of man. We came in peace for all mankind. To serve man, a cookbook. To serve mankind, same thing. So man and mankind are synonymous in that context, unless you put the A in front of it.
Right.
So I... say that to my teacher, and then get reprimanded.
Of course.
Because, of course, NASA and Neil Armstrong. Now, I'm not saying Neil made a big mistake. He's on the moon.
Transmitting from the moon. Maybe there was, there's some theory that there was an interruption.
The big mistake he made was not stepping on the moon and going, drink Coca-Cola. Because then Neil Armstrong would be living in a beautiful mansion right now.
I don't know that he's
surrounded by shape-shifting Frosties who would do his bidding, that he could just hold by the carrot nose. And then finally, years later, we find out, and I couldn't get in touch with my sixth grade teacher.
Right.
Or fifth grade teacher. Oh, it would have been later, seventh grade teacher. If I could remember who the teacher was that reprimanded me, I would go back to Greenfield, Massachusetts and kick his or her ass. But all I remember is being so heartbroken because no one understood me. I was the only one in the world
And you're complaining that Armstrong's the problem talking?
So once, but that's one of the things that bothers me. Frosty the Snowman. One small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind. He dropped an That's all he dropped. But it made a big difference to me as a kid, and I was reprimanded for noticing it. If they had said, I'd have no grudge against Neil Armstrong. All my hostility could go right directly to Frosty the Snowman. The teacher had said, you know, Penn, you're right, but he was probably pretty nervous stepping on the moon. Okay, fine. I can understand that. I can understand that very much. So the clown convention is exactly what, if you were writing a sketch on clown conventions, yep, it's exactly what you would write. There is one table that's covered with noses.
Yes.
Just rubber noses.
I've been.
That people can go. And then there's another booth with nothing but giant clown shoes. And there's a guy sitting behind there exactly as bored as if he was selling, you know, plumbing parts.
Right.
Don't write letters, not to say plumbing is boring. Plumbing is an exciting adventure. But I'm just using an example. And this whole table of noses and people coming up and trying them on. And as Doc Swan points out, these are not people that are clowns. These are people who want to be clowns, you know. And the example Doc Swan used was, he said that, you know, idiot, imbecile, and moron at one time were quasi-medical terms. And they were different levels of intelligence.
Right.
And he was saying, you know, can an idiot study hard enough to be an imbecile? I don't know what order they're in. But could an idiot study hard
right,
enough to be an imbecile? And so these people are trying hard to be a clown. They want to be talented enough when they cut you off in traffic. You can say, you know, F you, clown. You know, they want to be up to that level. Now they're not even
I've
there.
I've been, and yeah, you're right. I'm really boring. I'd like to be a clown now.
Yeah.
They're trying to step up.
They're trying to step up. They're trying to make a step up.
I think that's important.
And remember on the last election here in Nevada, they wanted to change the bylaws of the Constitution. It's not bylaws. Constitution of Vegas, of Nevada.
Yeah.
And they're, in order to vote, you cannot be an idiot.
Yes, that's one of the things it says, yes.
And the word idiot was in there, and we had a vote to change that language to something other than idiot. That might have been the only reason I showed up to vote, was to vote against changing that language. I love it that Nevada has the word idiot in our Constitution. And, of course, next time I'll show up to also vote for Nate Santucci,
who will
be, he'll be running for something.
Any day now, we'll have to stop talking about that.
I know. As soon as it starts, that's why I'm trying to get him
right,
all in.
Get him in now.
So,
vote for Nate.
Okay, this first hunk of the show, we have covered Frosty the Snowman, Doc Swan, clown conventions, Neil Armstrong on the moon. This has been a very, very fruitful first talk of the show. And the next talk of the show, I want to talk about the postal worker. I want to talk about our president. I'm not going to, you know, this is one you better not call the pocket. You know, it's like when you're playing pool. When you play pool, like hit all the balls hard,
sure,
and hope they go in some of the pockets, I can do okay.
Right.
When you play pool, that you got to go, oh, it's going to go over, you know, the red one
the
is going to go
pool
in the predictive pool, which is the way real people play pool.
Of course.
Not children. I never do well. So maybe I shouldn't even say in the next section. I should just say 866-313-FREE. That's 3733. Penn Radio, PennRadio at gmail.com or PennRadio.com. Penn Jillette, Michael Godeau, one small step for a man, one giant leap for all of mankind. You know, there must have been some magic. Ah, I hate that. Okay, good. Go ahead, read it.
Okay, from London. Mark from London. Why did Frosty the Snowman pull his pants down? He was waiting for the snowblower.
Seems like a fine. And that's not a dirty joke. He wanted to get the pants would gum up the snowblower, and it was time to get those out of the way. That's
nice.
That's the reason that's okay. Did you watch the State of the Union last night?
I heard a little bit on the radio.
Heard a little bit on the radio.
Yeah.
You know, Jack, who's our producer here, sitting in the room, he plays a drinking game.
Yes, he said he did.
Well, every time he says nuclear. How does he say nuclear, the president?
Nuclear.
Nuclear is right. Nuclear.
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 Nuclear, that's
nuclear.
It.
Yeah, nuclear. Nuclear. Every time he said that, they had to take some, I don't even know what liquor's called, but some liquor. They had to drink it down. Probably NyQuil.
That's what I would have drank.
And there was also other stuff they had to do. And so he came in hungover. this morning, I guess, saying that, you know, saying...
It doesn't show in his work.
I should be more like you guys, he said. And I don't know whether he meant not drinking or not watching the State of the Union, you know. But I got a friend of mine reported, and I didn't even know this, that the war protester, Cindy Sheehan,
yes,
remember her?
Sure.
She entered the gallery for the State of the Union address wearing
tickets. Good for her.
Wearing a T-shirt reading, 2,254 dead, how many more? And she was asked to cover it up by the Capitol Police, which I think is horrible. Should be able to wear whatever you want. And then she was later asked to remove it for war protesters gone wild, number 7. That she shouldn't have to cover that up. I mean, I just don't understand what is so hard to understand about freedom of speech. You say whatever you want. The second you hurt somebody else or touch them, not hurt them emotionally, the second you touch somebody else, you get in trouble. I mean, why isn't that an easy line? In law, we're always looking for easy, hard, strong lines. There's a good one. Say whatever you want. Now, I don't know, yelling fire in a crowded theater,
right.
How often does that happen? Every time heavy metal...
Every show you do, I think, isn't
yeah,
it, don't you?
I do yell fire, yeah. But that's my point, you know. Every time a heavy metal band plays in Massachusetts, someone yells fire. Fine. But the State of the Union, you know, it's just like, what does he do? He comes out and he says freedom more times than the Stones go, hoo, hoo, in Sympathy for the Devil. You know, just saying, you know, we're addicted. And I don't like the use of the word addicted that way, that we're addicted to oil. We use a lot of foreign oil. But, you know, it's only 20% of the oil that we get from the Middle East.
Sure.
And yet he's doing this big thing about it, and there's a whole commission and stuff like that. If they didn't subsidize gasoline, if they let it be the price it wants to be, the free market would take care of a lot of this. If gas would go up where it's supposed to go, like $5 a gallon, which is what it would be without subsidies, or wherever it would be, then, you know, we can. That's how the world decides how to allocate resources, is with the free market. And after talking free market stuff, I should now say we got a letter in that I mispronounced Ayn Rand. Yesterday.
Yes, you did.
Yes, I said Ayn Rand.
That was the story.
It's Ayn Rand. It rhymes with mine. Mine, Ayn Rand. And I am a big fan of Ayn Rand. You know, Bob Korn Revere, who is a big First Amendment attorney, he's going to be in next week. We're going to do an interview with him. I don't know what day we're having him in. Like
Wednesday or Thursday.
Wednesday or Thursday, yeah. And we're going to talk to him. He's a really good friend of mine, and he was saying that, when I saw him in D.C. like a couple of years ago, he came in and said that when he read Atlas Shrugged when he was 16 years old, you know, he said it really did change his life, and he thought everything is absolutely right in this. It's exactly correct. Uh-huh. I love it. This is the way I want to live. Free market, no God. Here I go. Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
You know, be strong. Sure. Howard Roark, you know, all that stuff.
Yep.
And then he said he decided at the age of whatever he is now, I think he's my age, so at the age of like, you know, late 40s, he decided to read it again because he wanted to kind of laugh at the silliness. Like when, you know, you listen to the music, like you go, oh, let's listen to Sweet Baby James, you know, because you were a kid and loved it and it sucks, right? So he thought he would read Atlas Shrugged, which is amazing that a First Amendment attorney on a lark can read Atlas Shrugged, which I believe is 35,000 pages.
Yeah, where did he find the time?
Well, see, that's the difference between Bob Korn Revere and you, and the only difference is people who are successful and talk in front of the Supreme Court
find time to read.
They don't spend a lot of time thinking about Frosty the Snowman. And you also told me...
I spend a lot of time thinking about Frosty the Snowman.
During this break, you told me that you find cartoon characters really sexy.
I do.
Like the Little Mermaid.
I think Little Mermaid's off.
So do you go to those anime porno sites?
Well, I've been to some anime shops in Japan.
No, but they have, you know,
some online. Yeah.
There's hardcore pornography that's drawn. It's cartoons.
Yeah, you got to pay for it though. I can't do that.
So that trumps desire.
Yes, it does.
So Bob Korn Revere said he read Atlas Shrugged again, and expected to be laughing his way through it. And he said to me, "You know, Ben, everything is 100% right.
It's still 100% right.
It's still right. Completely correct.
Good.
And that's one of the things that's so hard when you talk about libertarianism and atheism. It's been covered. I saw an interview at the TAM convention,
the amazing meeting,
which is Randy's meeting. He does every year. And I was just in the paper today. Not that I wouldn't have known it if it wasn't in the paper. because I was there, but that I did a Q&A, and I hosted a thing with
you
the Mythbusters.
You didn't know you were there. You found out in the paper. There was a picture of you at the Mythbusters thing.
Said, oh, there I am. And the Mythbusters,
that's where I was yesterday.
The Mythbusters spoke at the, it was Adam, Adam, Jamie, and Carrie were there, and they took a big Q&A. It was very popular. They were like the Beatles of the TAM. And it was great, and I hosted the Q&A, which what really is, the question is that they, everyone wants to ask is, can Penn shut up while other people answer questions? And the answer is yes.
Really?
I shut up fine.
I
was fine. I just kind of gestured to them, and they answered. And they're terrific. I mean, the Mythbusters don't do anything.
It's a great show.
They don't do any ooga booga stuff, as they say. They don't do any of the God stuff or supernatural stuff. Their stuff is just, can you put rockets in a car and fly over a canyon? And they're just terrific. And Carrie is very, very attractive. And it was. She's also smart and good. I should say that, not
right.
in that order. I mean, if she were Foster the Snowman, I might be tempted. Grab that carrot nose. And when we put it on her head. They were just great at the Mythbusters. And they also had this woman, Ellen Johnson, who's the head of American Atheists. And it's so cool that we have a sexy head of American Atheists
yeah,
now.
That's right.
And she did this thing about Madeline Murray O'Hare, who's the woman that was a very famous atheist and got prayer out of the schools. It was her case on behalf of her son that got prayer out of the schools. And I thought she was a whack job. And Ellen Johnson says no. Ellen Johnson says she was cool and smart. Mm-hmm. And she found out, we saw this lecture, that remember, I don't know if you remember, but when the Apollo astronauts, I don't know what Apollo it was, came around the moon and saw the, you know, the golf ball there, the, just the blue, beautiful Earth
right.
floating in space, they all had a moment of awe and religious power, and then they read from Genesis. They read,
right,
they read
sure,
the first
sure,
words of Genesis.
Sure.
And it was just this spontaneous thing. She found out it was in the log. It was in the NASA log planned weeks ahead of time. That at, you know, at the exact precise time, I mean, down to the minute and seconds, like, you know, 7:31:20, they would all say, I'm having a moment of awe and read from Genesis. Now, I'm just quoting an interview with Madeline Murray O'Hare.
Okay.
I don't know the truth about this. This is a wonderful thing for us to get some Gmails about, or maybe go to Snopes or something. Because from now on, we go to Snopes first before I go off half cocked and talk about giving people stuff for information I could clearly find myself.
Well,
by myself, of course, I mean you could go to Snopes and you could find this information. But Madeline Murray O'Hare, in this one interview from, I suppose, the 70s, claimed that that whole moment of awe coming around there was planned.
Uh-huh.
And all of this stuff is at the Amazing Meeting. They'll have another one next year. It was terrific. Paul Provenza did some stand-up.
He's on the show again pretty soon, too, actually.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Provenza's going to be back on, too, with Randy again.
Yeah.
Daniel Dennett was there. Speaking
sure.
about the
Darwin's dangerous idea.
Well, no,
whatever.
Actually, that's his book now. The new book is about the mechanical understanding of religion.
Okay.
You know, does religion just evolve, kind of? And I think what he postulates is there must have been some magic in that old Pope hat we found, because when we placed it on his head, he began to talk about original sin and say that condoms wouldn't stop AIDS. So I think he's talking about the magic in that old Pope hat we found.
Okay.
But Daniel Dennett was there, and it was pretty great to be. I mean, last year I was on the bill also.
Yes.
And I was on the bill with, like, Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens.
Right.
You know, and I'm going to be on a panel with two guys that are actually smart. I was just terrified. And I was on a panel with Murray Gell-Mann, you know, Nobel
sure.
Prize,
yeah.
Nobel Prize guy. And I'm sitting there with him
every
on the panel.
Every circus needs a monkey.
And I argued with him.
Can you ride a bike? You argued with Gell-Mann?
Just,
oh, man.
Just a little bit.
I hope it was about what was for lunch. That's
just a little bit, just a little tiny
bit. A Nobel Prize winning physicist, and you're arguing?
A little bit.
Okay.
Little bit. He was talking about the government. He was talking about the government funding science.
Okay.
And said that, you know, we needed a government that would understand what science to fund. And I just said, maybe the government shouldn't fund any science. Maybe that's not something you should do with taxes at gunpoint. Maybe that can be done by the free market. And then he said, oh, you're going to use the free market to explore space. And I said, yes. And then he said, but they take government programs away, they put them in. And I said to him, live by the feds, die by the feds. You shouldn't take money from the government for science. And he said, well, you're wrong. Some science has to be funded by the government. And I went, okay. But I did for a moment. I was actually...
You know, they're probably covering his house payments.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I know, sure, of
like
course.
He's saying, no, 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 I don't believe Penn should be funding a radio show.
Yeah.
What, am I crazy?
Yeah, if the free market were left on its own, Penn would be talking about, you know, Frosty the Snowman's old silk hat. This is penradio.com, P-E-N-N-R-A-D-I-O, at gmail.com, 866-313-FREE. That's 3733. And we'll be back right after this. A lot of stuff to talk about. Did we talk about anything I billboarded?
Nothing.
Good. That's the way it should be. Keep them on their toes. There must have been some magic in these old headphones we found. Godot, did you read about this caricatures of Mohammed?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the thing I'm talking about, freedom of speech. You can be Muslim. You can believe in Islam, and you can live in any of our Western countries.
Yes.
And we're thrilled to have you. It's wonderful to have you. But you don't get to make rules for everybody. You're not allowed to depict the prophet in pictures. But we are. You know, and my friend Rob, who I talk about often, Rob at right. Google, one of my closest friends, he wears a Mason ring all the time, a ring
right,
from
sure.
the Masons.
Sure.
And people say to him, you can't wear that ring if you're not a Mason. And he says, oh, I know that, but it's okay because I'm not a Mason. The point is,
yeah, that's a good point.
If you're not a member of the club, you know, you can't depict Muhammad in pictures. You can't make pictures of the prophet. You can't draw them. You can't, you know, Photoshop them. You can't have pictures of the prophet if you're a Muslim.
If you're in that club.
If you're not a Muslim, you do whatever the hell you want. So what they're doing now is the Middle East is punishing Denmark.
Yes.
How do you punish Denmark? You don't buy Gouda?
Yeah, they're skipping the Gouda for this week.
And how much Gouda is sold?
Apparently it's a fair amount.
Well, I hope that Denmark... that's not Dutch, is it? No. Denmark is the Danes.
No wooden shoes.
No wooden. Because we would have had a good joke if it were wooden shoes.
Wooden shoes, yeah.
It's not. So no, we're going to move off Gouda. That. But all I got to say is if you live in a free culture, you draw whatever the hell you want. Whatever the hell you want, you draw.
Okay.
And that's the other thing that makes me nuts is them saying that, you know, you can't have cartoons about stuff that's illegal. Like you can't have cartoons about underage sex or something. You can have cartoons about murder. You know, Popeye throws Bluto high in the air, higher than a real person should go safely. That's okay. You should be able to do anything you want in fantasy. Anything you want in fantasy, including if your fantasy includes taking Muhammad and putting an old silk hat on his head that has magic in it, so Muhammad begins to dance around with a bomb on his head and a fuse coming out of it. That is fine. If you're a Muslim, you can't do that. And there's certain stuff that I wouldn't do, you know?
They're boycotting Danish products.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're right. I think they're making a consumer choice. They're saying, we're not going to buy any stuff from Daneland.
Right.
Or something like that. Yeah. But we're not going to buy any Gouda. This is the perfect response.
Sure. You're right.
Sorry, I don't mean to.
No, but they did also. You're not interrupting the rant. They did also go into one of the newspapers with guns or something.
Yeah, they did those things too.
No,
stop buying the Gouda. Fine idea.
Stop buying Gouda is terrific. As a matter of fact, probably for your health, Gouda not buying it is fine.
I like it.
I like a nice strong cheddar much more. Do you like a cheese with your apple pie?
Sometimes, yes.
See, a piece of apple pie with a really sharp slice of Vermont cheddar.
Cheese and cheddar? Did you say cheddar?
Cheddar. You know, I decided that when I left New England, I had to learn to talk like regular people talk. Because
right.
if I came out with my New England accent and sound like I'm selling Pepperidge Farms or something. So I fought that. I fought that really hard. The other piece of news, besides the caricature of Muhammad, is that another postal worker went postal.
Yes.
Shot a lot of people, killed herself. Horrible, sad, terrible. Good for me. It's good for me. There's a joke in the show where we're picking people to come up to examine the guns.
Right, yeah.
And I say, you know, I want someone that believes in the Second Amendment very strongly, someone who has experience with firearms, you know,
right.
Police or military. And I need someone who was at no time in any way affiliated with the United States Postal Service.
So these people have suffered, and it's good for your joke.
Joke was starting to get stale.
Well, that's been a while.
It's been a while since some postal worker went postal. This freshens the pot so that all of us, and there's a lot of comedians who have postal references for violence in their show, are now. The funniest thing, Amazing Jonathan, you know, Amazing yes. Jonathan of the Staples Assistant in the Eye fame.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the funniest things he did was right after.
Funnier than stapling the girl in the eye, huh?
Nothing's funnier than stapling Penny in the eye. Nothing's going to be funnier than that. You can't predict that. Oh, and someone, I'm going to get back to the Jonathan thing, but someone found a website that said, you, by someone I mean you, sitting across from me, that Neil Armstrong did say he did say one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind, but the digital sampling, the rudimentary digital sampling they had back then, just swallowed it.
Actually, William sent this to us. He emailed us that. He understands it makes no sense as reported and is tired of English teachers telling him so.
And that's Neil Armstrong.
Neil Armstrong quote, yes. He's a little tired of the English teachers.
Well, I wish there were an English teacher in my school, you know, in Greenfield Public Junior High, that had enough sense to say, well, yes, maybe it was garbled up in their pen, but you're not crazy. Must have been some magic in that old astronaut helmet they found.
Astronaut.
I can't pass that off.
We're tired of monkeys going into space for sending ostriches.
Ostrichnaut. But Amazing Jonathan.
Yeah.
Had this joke in his show that I loved. I did not love the joke at all. I disliked the joke.
Okay.
But the follow-up to the joke killed me. I went and saw him, and it was in this period of time after the anthrax scare and before Roy was mauled by the tiger.
Right.
Which is a period, I think that's the bronze period in history. And he said, oh, I've gotten a letter from Siegfried and Roy. He did a whole Siegfried and Roy joke, series of a lot of gay jokes and tiger jokes and stuff. And he finished that up, and he said, I got a letter from Siegfried and Roy. I'm going to open this in front of you. And he opened up the letter, and out came tons of white powder that blew all over his face, which during the anthrax scare, you know, Siegfried and Roy hate me.
Sure, okay.
Got a little bit of a laugh.
Right.
But by the time I saw him, it was far enough away from the anthrax scare that he didn't get much of a laugh. And he turned to the audience and said, how many people have to die before that joke is funny again? And I thought it was the greatest line ever. And that's how I felt when the postal worker shot all those people. How many people have to die before that joke in my act? And then, of course, right after that,
sure, Roy
got his head torn off by a tiger, and everybody, and it was really funny, you know, because, no, it wasn't really funny. He got his head torn off by a tiger, and he was a wonderful guy.
He still is. He's still alive.
Yeah, I've seen him, like, twice since the accident.
I haven't seen him since the accident.
But a friend of mine saw him out to dinner. So, you know, so you don't expect to go out to dinner too soon after getting your head torn off by a tiger. You know, I've known Siegfried and Roy forever, and I made fun of them forever.
Everyone, we all had a Siegfried and Roy joke the show.
That was the great thing. All of them.
Every show in Vegas has a Siegfried and Roy joke.
So I that night that it happened, I rushed over to the hospital. I saw Siegfried and Bernie, the manager.
Right.
And we were really shook up because, you know, we've known them forever.
Sure.
And, we do stuff with guns, and everybody does something a little bit dangerous in their show, and not as dangerous as Roy. And so we were all, that's not even the right way to put it. It wasn't because we were scared of our own acts. It was because we were worried about a friend of ours who had been very badly injured.
And we all teased death, and, you know, he just got caught that time.
yeah, doing a very dangerous act, you
know?
And the surprising thing was that happened at night, I think on a Friday night.
Right.
And the next day was Saturday, and I was on my way back over to the hospital. I think Matt King called me and said he had just talked to Amazing Jonathan, and he said, everybody has to rewrite their show. And it was true. I had a whole Siegfried and Roy.
Well, I lost a friend and a joke.
And several jokes.
Several jokes.
Amazing Jonathan, I think, lost like 8 minutes of his show that night, you know. And Matt King had the magic cape of Siegfried and Roy that he had to change to, I think it's Elvis and Liberace now. And, you know, everybody was rewriting. And then I believe, and I'll say this very proudly, I believe I was the first one to put a Roy joke back in. I put a Roy joke back in, and it's really it's an interesting joke because it gets this from the audience, like I can't believe he's making fun of Roy getting his head torn off by a tiger, and yet it's really It's you know, it shows respect for Roy, so they can, after they do the they feel okay about me. They don't turn on me and beat me, which the audience is always. You've seen my show,
sure.
You know, the audience is always just a millisecond from turning on me and beating me to death. And the joke that I do is I'm about to juggle broken bottles, and if I have a tough bottle and I think I might get cut, I say, you know, I might be injured. Now, when I say injured, it doesn't mean I'm going to be rushed to the hospital like Roy. You're not going to be on CNN. And people go like, oh. What it's actually saying is that Roy was doing something much more death-defying than me. So it ends up kind of building up Roy. So I get,
sure.
I have my cake and I eat it too. I have my respect for Roy, but also get a laugh at him getting his head torn off by a tiger. The best of both worlds. That's very great. So the postal worker went nuts, and I get a joke. There's another good...
For another month or two, though, you're going to get the, oh, aren't you? I mean...
Oh, yeah, probably.
You probably get the, oh, you shouldn't be doing that
joke. Oh, I shouldn't be doing that. So, yeah. It's how much time you have in between.
I mean, when O.J. hit somebody else, because, you know, I had a really good O.J. joke.
What was your O.J. joke?
You know, I had this giant newspaper in the show, and I would, you know, in the middle of my act, I would stop and look at the paper and go, hey, look, O.J. Simpson's in some sort of trouble. Which at that point, of course, it was 24 hours a day of, you know, all O.J. all the time on the news.
So what do you do now? Have you stopped that joke?
I've stopped that joke, yeah.
And what do you do now when you're
living? Nothing. I do nothing now.
Nothing now?
No.
Just there's not even a joke there?
Not even a joke there.
I mean, with all due respect, doesn't seem very professional.
Well, you know, I had a joke, but I didn't really like it so much.
What was the joke you didn't like?
I said, oh, my gosh, look here. I have to use a different name all the time is what the problem was, you know.
So you'd have to
you have to rewrite it every day, you know. Like, oh, this is says here that Bill Gates has shot himself. Oh, wait, that's an I, not an O. And that was the joke that I did in the paper because there was Apple on the paper. And, you know, I just used Bill Gates as random. But you can see what I... You can see where my problem was.
Yeah. But every night you'd have to write it. And for the money you're getting paid.
Yeah, well, you know.
We're doing, what, you work 15 minutes a night, 12
yeah.
minutes a night?
Yeah.
And Lance pays you a lot of money.
He does. He's very generous.
And you can't even take 15 minutes to write a single joke every night?
I'm very busy.
Very busy. Very busy.
I have kids.
You know what you're very busy doing? You're very busy looking at Frosty the Snowman and having impure thoughts, aren't you?
I am.
That's what you're doing. That's
I love
doing.
Frosty.
The guy that we said we'd give all the stuff to if he came to Vegas,
yeah.
I want to throw in, we said we'd let him come to the radio show. We said
sure.
We'd give him tickets to Penn and Teller. We said we'd give him tickets to Lance Burton.
Right.
I want to throw in dinner at any place he chooses in Vegas for him and 50 of his friends.
50?
I want to throw in that we will take him to Jubilee, take him to a strip club, and all lap dances are on me. You can take that two ways. All lap dances are on me. And, oh, what did we find out?
Oh, he can't come.
He can't make it out.
Oh,
oh
no.
What a
Mario.
Sad thing.
We're so sorry,
Mario. Because I was gonna give him a car if he came out here. I was gonna do
Mario
so much.
Mario just said he couldn't afford the tickets. Okay, if you give him a car, if you claim that you're gonna give him a car, he's gonna come and sell the car.
Okay,
you're in trouble now.
Then all we're offering him is precisely
tickets.
What we offered him before.
Yes,
tickets to the two shows, and maybe I'll throw in dinner too, and he can come out there. But he can't make it, so
can't
that's what it is. But Mario said he was happy. We
all
talked
for the
see,
world.
This is the thing that drives me crazy. You know, not that this is the same thing. Okay. This is related, but not the same thing. This is a bad segue. But you know the Make-A-Wish Foundation?
Yes.
Where kids come,
want
their last wish?
Yeah.
And sometimes their last wish is to come to see Penn and Teller.
Right, yeah.
So they make this deal with us where they send the kid out, you know, and, you know, maybe he's from Idaho or something, and they fly him to Vegas, and he comes to see the Penn and Teller show, and then we meet him afterwards and take him backstage, and... You got to do it. I mean, in your heart, you have to do that.
Of course.
But, man, is there ever a time when you feel more inadequate? Have you ever had that happen?
Yeah, we have brought kids back. Yeah.
I don't know how people stand it, because you just want to say to the kid, no, don't pick me. Pick something good. You know, and the kid is, you know, very sick and dying, and you have to look him in the eye, and he's chosen your show, and you feel so inadequate. That's the time when I most want our show to be better. You know, I just want to say, I should have.
So if Sting is coming, you don't care, but if this kid's coming,
yeah,
that's
that
true.
That kind of vote
sure.
of saying they want to see your show, it just puts. And of course, it's very sweet, and it's very wonderful, and you know,
it's
we
nice
do,
that you guys
you do anything you can, and you know, you give them everything in the world.
Sure.
sure, you give them the videos and stuff, and then you just say, hey, and I'm sorry we're not better. Why couldn't the Beatles get back together for you or something? Anyway, this is Penn Jillette. There must have been some magic in those old headphones I found.